This is Not Your Average Financial Podcast, episode 341, Base versus Boost, the ultimate ratio for bank on yourself.
Traditional financial planning is no longer working. And in the new normal economy, your host, certified financial planner Mark Willis, invites you to join us as we engage the new and improved steps for establishing financial sanity. Be curious, be stable, be sane. This is Not Your Average Financial Podcast, helping you think different about your money, your economy, and your future.
Hey, welcome everybody to this week's episode. Glad you are here. As you know, we have sort of a multiple mini-series, non-consecutive mini-series, lots of them on our show. Episodes like Myth-Busting, where we break down common misconceptions in the financial universe, or our Toolbox episodes, where we give practical insights on how to put particular tools in the financial world to better use. And of course, our client testimonial episodes, where we bring real stories from real people on how they're changing their financial lives through our life-changing, not-so-average strategies to help improve their financial futures. Now, I'd like to try something a little different for today's episode. I love having one-on-one conversations with clients. Not only does it bring practical change and substantially put their life on a better trajectory, but through their questions and discussions with me, I'm learning so much. In fact, I learn maybe as much, if not more, than the client does. So the way they phrase their questions typically helps me think critically about how to best really understand some of these counterintuitive financial tools like we make available for our clients. It's really a mutually beneficial relationship. So recently, a client asked me to put together a few of the most interesting and commonly asked questions on an episode, and I was glad to oblige. In fact, I want to make it a recurring, non-consecutive, recurring miniseries. Now, the problem is, I keep getting great questions, and I want to pass them along to you as well. So we'll call this the Mailbag Recurring Series. So in each one of these mailbag episodes, we'll dive deep into one or maybe two or three different questions that I've been asked over the last few weeks from various clients. And these are all questions that have come up in my conversations with clients over email or submitted to us through our website or just over the phone or over Zoom as we're having one-on-one consultations with folks. Now, if you're not sure how to reach out, if you'd like to leave me a question or a message, you can write to me at hello@nyafinancialpodcast.com. So that's hello@nyafinancialpodcast.com. Write out your question. We'll be sure to include it in an upcoming mailbag series. So let's get to our question for the day. This question is going to be on policy design, bank on yourself designed policies. Somebody was considering getting a policy recently, and he asked me about the best ratio of premium. And he writes, his question says, how much should a policy put towards base premium and what should go toward paid up additions? And, you know, that's a phenomenal question, very simple question, but there's a lot behind it. And in fact, I want to give some context to it. Policy design is one of those key training components that I received and every bank on yourself professional receives. And candidly, having poor policy design can be one of the biggest bear traps for many people who hear about this strategy and end up buying a life insurance policy from someone who is not a bank on yourself professional. In fact, I've seen too many people who thought they had a true bank on yourself design policy, but they bought it from someone who was touting phrases like becoming your own banker or legacy wealth banking this or paradigm wealth life banking that. There's so many knockoff phrases. Only bank on yourself is trademarked and protected by Pamela Yellen and her team. And you want to make sure that you're working with a true bank on yourself authorized professional before you sink your hard-earned money into something that may not be designed properly. So to give this question a bit more context, I dove a little deeper and had some back and forth with this client. He'd been doing all sorts of research on YouTube. Now, this is, of course, the gold standard, the best place to get all your financial, medical, tax, legal, and important any other important advice, right, is on YouTube. And he had heard that when building one of these policies, you should shrink down the base face amount to as small an amount as possible. In fact, one person online told him to do 10% base premium, and 90% of your premium should go toward this other component called paid-up additions. And so he was wondering if that was the right move when he asked his question. No, it is a smart question. It goes straight to the topic of engineering. And again, for those not aware, Bank on Yourself designed policies usually have three major components to them. There's the base face amount of life insurance, there's the term rider attached to the policy, and then there's the paid up additions rider. Here's a quick explainer on each one of these, but we've gone into a whole episode on this clear back in episode 6 that really discusses the engineering of these policies. So listen to that episode 6 for more detail. Now, first of all, the base amount, that amount of insurance, aka the initial face amount, is the base face amount of whole life insurance. It's the original amount of life insurance. That's the death benefit upon which we're going to build the rest of this policy. So it's like the dough for your pizza. You got to have that first before you can add any other toppings. Now, usually we make that base face amount as small as possible while keeping on the right side of the tax law and considering other factors. So in the realm of whole life insurance, the base face amount stands as a crucial pillar. It represents the guaranteed sum of money that's going to be paid out to your beneficiaries upon your passing. It's the bedrock. It's the underlying component upon which the whole life insurance policy will rest, and it serves several critical functions. Imagine the base face amount as a promise etched into your policy. It's the predetermined dollar value that the insurance company will guarantee to disperse to your designated beneficiaries when you're no longer around. So this amount remains fixed throughout your policy's lifetime, and it offers some stability and predictability for yourself and for your loved ones too. And it also comes with it a guaranteed ordinary cash value, which will grow on a predictable and even guaranteed basis for your entire lifetime. Now, I mentioned that there are three components to a Bank on Yourself type policy. And we've talked about the first, that's the base face amount. The second is the term rider. Now, that term rider is added on top of the initial face amount, and it's there for a temporary period of time. And it's there to lift up that death benefit high enough so that we can be sure to add a paid up additions, which we'll talk more about here shortly. So that term rider, again, is temporary, and it's then removed after that temporary period of time, after the purpose of the term rider has been served. Or you can also do some other things with that term rider, like convert it into its own whole life insurance policy if you choose to do that in the future. Now, paid up additions riders, for the most part, are the most efficient part of the cash value that's going to be built up, especially early on in the policy's life. The paid up additions is like the nitrous oxide of your policy. So we try to make that a large portion of your premium each and every year. Now, it also has the paid up additions also has a death benefit added to it as well. So you'll see that the death benefit on a true Bank on Yourself policy will increase over time, and your cash value with a paid up additions also will build up quite nicely as well. So let's actually think about it like this. Let's say you're considering a plain vanilla, ordinary, not Bank on Yourself designed whole life policy. And all you're considering is the death benefit. That's all you care about for this moment. Okay, so just walk with me on this. So think of it this way. If you chose a base face amount of, let's say, $250,000, when you're purchasing your whole life policy, regardless of how long you live or any fluctuations in the policy's cash value, your beneficiaries are going to receive that $250,000 upon your graduation day, let's say. All right, so this provides them with a safety net. It covers their expenses, their mortgage, education. It's true life insurance. That's what this is at the end of the day. So if you took a look at the premium for this $250,000 of ordinary whole life insurance, you might find that the premium is $1,500 a month. You might also notice that there's no cash value in the first 2 years of this ordinary whole life policy. So $0 of cash value after you sunk in 18 grand over 2 years. That's $1,500 a month over 2 years. Ouch. I mean, oofta, that's a hard pill to swallow for anybody. Now, once you're staring at the numbers, though, you start to think, you know, this cash value thing is not so bad. Maybe I want more of that and I don't need as much death benefit after all for now. So never fear. There is a way we design these bank on yourself policies, and it's cutting back or trimming back the death benefit, the original base face amount. Let's say we took it from that $250,000 down to $75,000. Now, why would we do that? Now, while the death benefit is an important component for many of our clients, they're mostly looking at how to accumulate as much cash value as possible within the policy. And with all things being equal, the less you put toward the premium of your face amount, the more money you can put toward your paid-up additions and other riders that help accelerate your cash value, which we'll talk about again just in just a minute. So the smaller the face amount, the more your cash value can grow. You can think of this much like a seesaw. If we shrink down the face amount, you'll have more of your discretionary savings that can go toward the paid-up additions rider, which ultimately gives you instant cash value accumulation. However, if we shrink down that face amount, we're also creating for ourselves a problem. You see, the government has rules on what's considered life insurance, and there needs to be a certain relationship between the premium you're paying and the death benefit you're purchasing. If you shrink that death benefit down too much, or if you cut it out completely, you no longer have life insurance. You have something else known as a modified endowment, which loses some of the tax advantages of most life insurance policies. So the way forward here, and I think this is a genius discovery by a colleague, a bank on yourself professional and colleague of mine, was to add a term rider to the policy. So the term rider is a rider for term insurance that can be added at a fraction of the cost of the face amount, of the ordinary face amount. And it allows you to have a much higher death benefit on the cheap, or as long as you'd like to overfund your policy with paid up additions. So let's say we added to your smaller $75,000 face amount, let's say we added a term rider for $175,000. Now it might only cost you $20 a month to add this rider, this term rider, and that gets your total death benefit back up from $75,000 back up to the original $250,000. But now, instead of paying $1,500 a month like the ordinary whole life policy, now you're only spending, let's say, $450 a month on premium. So this means you now have over $1,000 a month that you can put towards, your paid up additions rider. That paid up additions rider is what really accelerates the cash value accumulation and the increasing death benefit as well. The paid up additions rider is what builds cash value right away as you increase your death benefit over time, such as that cash value begins to explode, and that your cash value, even in the first month, even in the first year, typically you're going to have 8 to 40 times more cash value than a traditional whole life policy when we design it this bank on yourself way. So honestly, that's a wake-up call to many people to design a policy for cash accumulation needs and an increasing death benefit that more than satisfies their insurance need as well. If you want to hear more about this and see some numbers on all this, go back and listen to episode 142, Paid Up Additions on a Mission. Now, all three components, the base face amount, the term rider, and the paid up additions, act a lot like a sailboat, the different components of a sailboat. There are three components in a good sailboat. You have the hull of the sailboat is the boat part. It's somewhat like the initial face amount, small as it can be, but crucially important to keep you out of the water. The term rider is like the mast on your sailboat, lifting up the death benefit as high as it can be for as cheap as possible, right? That's all it's there for. And then the paid up additions is like the sail of your sailboat. Very efficient at catching the wind. It can be raised and lowered at will. You know, you have a flexible paid up additions rider where you can add more in some years, lower it down in bad years. It adds most of your cash value too in the early years of the policy. Much like a good sailboat, you want a good balance between the boat and the sail, the hull and the sail. If the hull of your boat is the base policy and the sail is the paid up additions rider, you want a good balance between both of those two components. Now, some people think that the base is like some sort of necessary evil and that we should shrink it down to as small as possible or even get rid of it entirely. Now, using your sailboat analogy, how would that turn out if you got rid of the boat part of your sailboat? That's right, you'd be all wet. Your powerful paid-up additions sail has now just become a wet blanket, and you're going to be going nowhere, sinking fast. If you think the base contract is like a necessary evil, or you should get rid of it entirely, then please do so. And just go get a bank account, or even better, just get a glass jar and put it in your kitchen cupboard and stuff some money in there. All right, so please notice my sarcasm when I say this. But if we don't design these policies correctly, they can absolutely wreck themselves. Imagine you're in a long-distance boat race, and imagine your boat is just a tiny little life raft, but your sail is absolutely massive. We're talking gargantuan. When that race starts, your sailboat's going to be shot out right in front of everybody else who's got that heavy boat to carry along, and you'll look great in the early part of the race, but your boat is top-heavy, and it's easily going to tip over with the wrong set of winds because it's all out of balance. The boat was too small, and the other more balanced boats are going to end up winning that long-distance race. In fact, when that wind stops blowing, your sail is going to droop down and actually drag down the overall performance of your tiny little sailboat. Okay, so in my metaphor, if you have too small of a base policy and a too heavy a reliance on the paid-up additions rider, like if you have a 10% base, 90% paid-up additions ratio, then your policy is going to be all out of whack. It looks awesome in the first 2 or 3 years, and many advisors on YouTube love showing those numbers where it's 10% base and 90% paid up additions. But please realize the power of the base contract. The base premiums and the cash values are where the majority of your dividends come from, especially in the later years. So what this means is the smaller your base premium, the more you're hurting the capacity to grow your money over the long term. That's right. There's a reason for the base contract. It's not a necessary evil. The base contract has more expenses early on, and we certainly don't want too much base premium either. Or if we get 100% base, again, we'd have zero in cash value later on. But base premium is not an evil. It's what provides most of your cash value growth later on, and larger dividends are going to greatly help you in your retirement years. So, much like your sailboat's hull, the hull of a boat weighs more than the sail. It requires upkeep. You got to patch holes in that boat. You got to put tar and nails and whatever in wood, and replacing that hull is expensive. And the sail is what's pushing you through those expenses, especially early on. But later on, the sail has become tattered. It's weighing you down. It's not as efficient anymore. But the momentum of your hull, the boat, will be providing speed and power. The base portion of the life insurance contract will be providing the largest cash accumulation for you as you enter retirement. Like the hull of a boat, it's now cutting through the water in a way that the sail never could. So if there are years or even months when your income is less than you expect, it would be like the wind stopped blowing. The sail is going to droop. The paid up additions is not being funded. And now you're dead in the water, as they say. The boat isn't moving. Now, while I love the paid-up additions rider, the PUA's paid-up additions stop being as efficient in terms of your internal rate of return and policy growth after they've been in your contract for a few years. Now, this is built on their actuarial table design of how paid-up additions really work. So PUA's or paid-up additions provide instant growth, but they quickly then trail off in terms of dividend yield. They don't yield as much dividend performance as compared to base contracts. Now, to maybe use one more metaphor here, it's the difference between refined grains, you know, the instant sugar hit you get when you gobble down a couple of cupcakes, or whole grains, the slow burn, the longer satiety you have. You know, when you have some base premium, you're going to have some whole grains mixed in there with your refined grains of the paid up additions. So most of my clients who are in their age of, like, let's say their early 40s, they're looking to fund this policy, not just for 2 or 3 years, but a long period of time. And I would suggest maybe a blend closer to 40% base and 60% paid up additions. This is how all of my personal policies are designed. I'm happy to discuss all those with you. So by increasing that base premium, even just by a little bit, you know, from 10% to 20% or 30% or 40%, you'd increase your dividends fourfold. For every 10%, you increase your base over your lifetime. Let me say that again. By increasing your base premium by just 10%, you'd increase your dividends that you'd receive fourfold over your lifetime. Now, that is a passive income that you do not want to ignore. Now, to increase the base premium means you're going to have slightly less liquidity in the first several years of your policy. Let's say roughly 10% less liquidity. If you're putting in, let's say, a $10,000 in annual premium into your policy, you might have $7,500 of cash value in year one versus $8,500 of cash value in year one. So, in essence, you're missing out on $1,000 of liquidity in the first year. So what did you get for that? Well, you lost $1,000. What did you get for it? Well, you have a fourfold increase in total dividends over your lifetime. That to me doesn't make much sense, to give up four times as much dividends just to have an extra $1,000 in my pocket this year. Again, the whole point of whole life insurance is to think for your whole life, right? To think long range. And if you're really just nickeling and diming your early liquidity like that, you're probably not thinking right. You know, you probably should stop thinking about getting a life insurance policy and just get things that have no costs, like a bank account. Or even better, just get a shoebox and stuff money in there and put it under your mattress. But again, if you're able and ready to think about a lifetime of cash value efficiency, then putting your money into a properly designed policy with a good blend of base premium and paid-up additions makes the most sense. Think long range, and you will be rewarded. How long is long range? Well, I hope it's longer than just 1 year. I mean, when will you ever not need money growing more efficiently for you? Think about that for a minute. When in your lifetime are you ever not going to need money? Just yesterday, I helped a couple. It's a young couple. We were looking at their policy. We were looking at hers specifically. We were talking about the policy's design. And I brought up the cost of insurance in the first year. It's always important to look at the pros and the cons and considerations when making a decision. And her plan was to put in $60,000 per year into her policy. Now, keep in mind, your numbers are going to be different, but that was her numbers. Okay. So in year one, she had put in $60,000 and had about $40,000 available as cash value liquid in the first year. This means she had about 67%, two-thirds of her money was liquid in the first year. Now, why did she lose some of her cash value in this policy? That's right, it's because she was buying life insurance. She had a $1.3 million death benefit that would be paid to her family if she passed away in year one. Now, that is a giant, massive asset to her family. God forbid she passes away this year. And of course, it's a giant liability to the insurance company if they have to cough that money up. Since she only gave them 60 grand, they're having to cough up 1.3 million. So there's definitely a cost that potential risk would be to the insurance company. Now, thankfully, she was not stuck at just looking only at year one. And so as we looked a little further down the page of her projections and spreadsheets, with the guarantees of the cash value and the current dividends presumed, she and I were shocked at how the policy performed in just the next couple of years. And she was able to think long range, and not even that long. So for example, in year three to year four, her cash value increased by $64,000. So the money went from $1 amount to another dollar amount, and that increase was $64,000. That's how much it grew by in just 1 year. That was in year three to year four. Now, keep in mind, she'd only been funding this policy at $60,000 per year. And just like in the previous years, from year three to year four, she threw in another 60 grand. And again, as I mentioned, the cash value went up by 64,000 in that year, in year four. So in that same year, her death benefit had grown to $1.6 million. Remember, it was only $1.3 million just a few years earlier. Okay, so just to summarize, if you're multitasking, come back to me here. This part's important. Just to summarize what's going on here, by year three to year four, cash value in her policy was increasing by more than her annual contributions. And she had a $1.6 million death benefit. So in year three to year four, who is paying who for that life insurance policy? Yes. Yes. In essence, the insurance company is paying you, or in this case, our client, at that point. Not literally, of course, but on balance, if she puts in $60,000 and the cash value grows by $64,000, that's all the information she needed to know that she was owning a policy at that point that was growing by more than she was putting into it on an annual basis. She was able to think longer than even just 4 years from the present, and we looked further down the page. We looked all the way down to her retirement, where she was putting in, altogether, she'd put in $600,000 for the entirety of her contract, but she had a grand total of just under $1 million of cash value and a $2 million death benefit at that point in retirement. So she starts to take out $50,500 per year, income tax-free under the tax law, in which she does that for 25 years throughout her retirement lifespan. Guys, that's a $1.26 million of tax-free income that she enjoys over her lifetime and retirement needs, and she's still able to leave a low six-figure death benefit to her family upon her passing away at age 95. Now that's thinking long range, and because she was willing to think long range, the policy performs incredibly well throughout her retirement and even beyond that to the next generation. Now, what about you? Are you willing and able to think long range? Can you think at least as long as your lifespan? What about multiple generations? Now, as we wrap up today's episode, I just want to briefly mention about a business that I found in Japan. It's the oldest family-owned business I'm aware of in the world. It's the Hoshi Ryokan, and it's a hotel in Komatsu, Japan. It's the oldest family-owned business in the world. It was founded in 718 AD. And it's still owned by the same family. It's an incredible Japanese hotel. It's in the beautiful setting of the Japanese Alps. The founder, Hoshi Ryokan, was a Buddhist priest, and he was clearly thinking long-term when he established the hotel. He chose a location that was both beautiful and convenient for travelers, and he built the hotel to last. The hotel has been passed down for over 46 generations. I mean, do you think that founder was thinking long-range? I mean, you bet. That's over 1,000 years of business ownership there. The bottom line is, it's very important to think long range. When do you want your money growing at its most efficient? For me, I want mine to be growing at its most efficient in the future so I can keep up with inflation. I can keep up with my spending and retirement. That's when I need it working at its best. Okay, so some practical takeaways from our episode here. First, think long range with your life insurance. Consider how this policy will perform, not just in year one, but over your lifespan and even beyond. Next takeaway, balance your base premium and paid-up additions. The Bank on Yourself professional you work with can design this policy correctly in the proper design, making sure that it's working in your best interest to help make sure you're staying focused on the long term. Next, beware of the shrinking base face amount. Don't let that boat get too small and top-heavy with too big a sail. Term riders, too, can also be your friend. Okay, so taking action. One, definitely review your existing life insurance policy, if you have one. Second, research Bank on Yourself professionals. Find a qualified professional who can design this policy the right way and help tailor your specific needs and financial goals. Next, use online tools and calculators. You can sit down with me and I can help you set those up. And lastly, ask some questions of your professional. Don't be afraid to go back and forth and understand what the policy's design is, understand their rationale behind the recommendations before you commit to a policy. And maybe learn some from the hotel, the Hoshi Ryokan in Japan, about thinking multi-generationally. If you can do that, if you can take these steps, you can gain some valuable insights into Bank on Yourself, designing this policy properly both for you and your future generations. So the big takeaway is to prioritize long-term thinking, not just refined grains, the instant hit, the instant gratification of today. Do your research, work with a qualified Bank on Yourself professional, and choose a design that aligns with your personal goals and dreams. Okay, so that's it for today's episode. I just thought it'd be great to dive deeper into this policy design idea. Had some people asking about it lately, so I wanted to get an episode out so you could understand where our minds are when we design these policies for you. And that's it for today's episode. If you've got questions that you'd like to add to the mailbag, don't forget hello@nyafinancialpodcast.com. Write it out today while you're thinking about it, and I'd love to include it in an upcoming episode. Thank you for joining me for this week's episode of Not Your Average Financial Podcast. helping you think and live differently with your money, your economy, and your future.
This has been another episode of the Not Your Average Financial Podcast. To join a financial revolution and start thinking different about money, go to www.nyafinancialpodcast.com and click Request a Meeting.
The topics presented in this podcast are for general information only and not for the purposes of providing legal, accounting, or investment advice. On such matters, please consult a professional who knows your specific situation.